Hello, and welcome to the Albuquerque Theatre Guild podcast. I'm Mike Miller, and I'm your host. Thank you for joining us. This week, we're talking with Brian Hansen and Rhonda Lewis from the Adobe Theatre about the New Mexico premiere of The Book of Will.
I love to talk about this show. I tell you, there's so much going on. It's just great.
Okay, well, let us start it off then. Welcome, Brian and Rhonda.
Thank you.
Talk to me about The Book of Will.
Well, Rhonda, why don't you start off? You're on the board. Can you talk about how the board decided to go with this particular play?
Absolutely. This play was suggested to us about a year ago. And immediately we fell in love with it when we read the script. All of the members of the artistic committee read the script and absolutely adored it from the get-go. It's just so beautifully written. And so we had a board member really go to bat and wrote to Lauren Gunderson, who is the playwright, wrote to her personally to try to get the rights, because the rights were not available to amateur companies at that time. And so she really went to bat for us to get the rights for this show. And so we were actually the first amateur company to secure the rights to perform The Book of Will, which is very exciting for us. So this is a New Mexico premiere. We're the first theater in New Mexico to produce The Book of Will, and the first amateur company to get the rights. I think it's kind of making the rounds now at some of the Shakespeare festivals.
Absolutely.
But as far as New Mexico, this is very exciting for us.
Mm-hmm. So if I may interject real fast, just to clear some things up for perhaps the audience listening, I understand the legal distinction between professional theater and amateur theater or community theater. But knowing most of the cast, or at least a great number of the cast, personally, I could say they are anything but amateur. And so I think the audience can look forward to anything as brilliant as they will see anywhere in the country. With that said, there explains amateur, so that you
know,
we're not really amateurs here.
No.
Brian?
It's one of the great things about Albuquerque is that the quality of the talent, for whatever reason, is amazingly high. And you've got to remember that we cast this show, which is about William Shakespeare, at least his legacy, at the same time that they were doing two of Shakespeare's shows on the Plaza. So theoretically, the Shakespearean actors were all downtown. But in fact, we came up with a very strong cast, and I'm excited for people to see it.
Well, we have 16 people, I think, is what the number I heard.
That's
in the cast. And we're talking with Rhonda. So at the risk of boring our audience to death, you want to list? No, don't do that. Don't do that.
We have 16 people, 16 cast members portraying 22 characters. So it's very interesting the way that it's done.
So the audience should come and see who the cast actually is.
Yes.
Absolutely. But one of the key points here is that Gunderson has put together, at least in my view, a play in which the company moves in and out of roles without much, you know, no replacement of noses or, you know, putting on funny dialects or any of that stuff. It's a company effort in a way that well, Shakespeare and his company would certainly appreciate.
I think so.
It's true. We've got a large number of characters being played by a somewhat smaller number of actors, but that is part of the power of the play. It's more like Shakespeare's company, where, you know, Shakespeare, any of Shakespeare's plays would have been put on in his own time by about 16 actors, and that's males playing females, of course. So people appear again and again and again in the course of the play. Well, so do they in this particular production. Although this production is not directly about Shakespeare's, or the production of Shakespeare's plays, it's about his legacy. And one of the Gunderson's real strengths is that she has been able to take a moment in history which we always knew was pivotal. I mean, we were right on the verge of losing about half of Shakespeare's plays if these two actors and their families had not pulled together to make this this volume work. But to take it and expand it in human terms. So all of a sudden we see what it takes for a legacy to be created and carried on. And to her credit, one of the things she has done is to say, yeah, and the women count too. And this is important because the wives of the actors are willing to make sacrifices. They're willing to urge their husbands on when the husbands are suddenly saying, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing this? And what emerges is the equivalent of it takes a village, you know, to raise a child. It takes a village, in effect, to create a legacy like the First Folio. I think that's one of the real strengths of this particular play.
It's really beautiful, too, the way that she has written the women's roles into the story, because they are such a key part of the story, of her imagining of the circumstances, of the way that this came together. And they really are, they're wonderfully written roles for the women. They're very strong, and they're just such a key part. I think it's very nice to see the treatment of the women in the story, and because you typically wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. For years, I taught theater history. And, you know, you get to this particular portion, you say, well, William Shakespeare died in 1616, and in 1623, two of the members of his company, you know, got together and put together his plays, and, you know, it's maybe the students write it down in their notes, maybe they don't. It's not, a truly important thing. Gunderson, as a good playwright, as a terrific playwright, as a matter of fact, has looked at that moment and said, okay, let's humanize it. What did it take at that time to pull together his plays, which were scattered to the winds? And one of the reasons, of course, there's a desperation to the whole thing is that the actors who memorized the lines are dying. And suddenly the death of Richard Burbage, for example, one of the great Burbage, the chief actor of the company, and they suddenly realize nobody actually knows all the lines that he played. And they said, oh, well, we'll have to find the scripts. And it turns out, of course, there was a fire in the Globe Theater in, 1610, I guess. And many of the scripts were simply consumed in the fire. So they have to start reassembling them. And they have to reassemble them from the sides, that is to say, the individual actors' speeches, and put them back together again. And this is a labor of love, but it's also a labor of historical responsibility. Because the idea that we could have, at that moment, lost such important plays as Lear, you say, oh, what's going on? This could not be. But anyway, I just, as you can tell from my voice, I'm excited by it. And the way it takes history and moves it into the human sphere is just beautifully done. And, of course, the poetry. There's the poetry.
And I would say, you don't have to be a Shakespeare expert or even a huge fan to appreciate this play, because it's really a human story. It's the human experience, and it's the lives of the actors and their families that were involved in putting this together behind the scene. There are plenty of Shakespeare references, believe me, and those will be greatly appreciated by any fan of Shakespeare. But you don't have to be a very knowledgeable Shakespeare expert to get this and to appreciate this show.
And, of course, the play is written in modern English.
Yes.
Modern American English, yes, to be honest. And completely accessible. It's not as if it's in iambic pentameter or anything like that. Yeah.
But very well done. This is one of those experiences where I feel like, from the cast side, it's sometimes you feel like you're creating theater magic, and this has felt very much like that. Being involved in this from beginning to end, you just know sometimes you're involved in something very, very special, and this is one of those efforts, and it's been tremendous to have this opportunity and just to be able to bring this to the stage and bring it to life. It's wonderful.
Let me give you an example of how this project, and it really is a project, has started off with relatively small things and then built. For example, I was talking with Carla Cafola, who is doing the props on this show, and months ago, because she wanted to be part of it. I wanted her to be part of it. And I said, well, you know, I was thinking, I've never seen in the Adobe Theater a false proscenium. That is to say, a proscenium which is built within the proscenium, because the theater is not really a proscenium theater, but anyway, we'll set that aside. I said, well, I was sort of thinking about books that I've seen in which the frontis material is, the page is completely surrounded by, you know, I don't know, all the kind of, I guess, the stuff they had hanging around the print shop. And, you know, there'd be like stag's heads and all that kind of stuff, horns and that kind of stuff. And I said, well, could we get that same idea? And so she said, well, sure, that'd be possible. And we started talking about it. And then she said, well, what goes in there? And I said, well, I don't know. But since this takes place in, as we now know, a tap house, which is adjacent to the Globe Theater, and it's a family operation, let's say that there are props. And say, let's say that the props for all of William Shakespeare's plays are up there in the proscenium arch. Like we have the ass's head for A Midsummer Night's Dream, and we have this and we have that and a goblet and crowns and all this different kind of stuff. So Carla set out to recreate that. And I think the audience, particularly the audience that knows Shakespeare, will look up there and say, holy smoke, we are embedded in the world of Shakespeare's plays. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not written into the script. That just happens to be one of the creative things that kind of came spinning out of this particular production and this particular company. Over and over and over again in the plays, actors have found moments where Gunderson sort of indicates, well, I'll give you another moment. When Shakespeare died, he left money for three of his friends, closest friends in the company, to buy mourning rings. And they wore them the rest of their lives. So the actors all said, we want our mourning rings, and we want them early in rehearsal. I said, oh, okay, great. So we provided them with their mourning rings, which are pretty garish, but nonetheless, kind of fun. And so as they rehearsed, they began to find ways to use those rings to associate themselves, you know, sort of like we band of brothers kind of thing, mm-hmm. with those rings. And time and time again, they use those mourning rings to tell each other, yeah, we're together on this project, right? Right. So that sense of the, I don't know, the creative experience of theater has just been fabulous, actually.
But something strikes me here, mm-hmm. in that you've got the professional theaters who have the professional directors and, mm-hmm. and creators, designers and stuff, doing what will become probably the footprint or the template for all of the shows that then go on the road and mm-hmm. the theaters around. But having the premiere here in Albuquerque, our audiences get to witness a completely independent production of the same material.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say one of the interesting things from the production side of things, as far as the Adobe is concerned, the space is being used very differently than what our audiences are used to. It's almost immersive, mm-hmm. in a way. I feel like it's going to be very different than what our audiences are used to seeing, because it's, I feel like we've just taken things up a notch as far as the production side of things. You know, there's going to be entrances, exits that people are not used to and not expecting. And it's just a very, this is an intimate venue anyway. If you've seen a show at the Adobe, you know, it's a comfortable, intimate space. And we have, you know, our audiences are very used to that. And you do sort of feel like you're in the show anyway, in any show you're in here, just because it is an intimate space. We're taking it beyond that. And I feel like the way the space is being used and the way that Brian has envisioned this show is very unique. And I think it will be very exciting for our audiences to see.
When you say immersive and the audience is mm-hmm. very intimate, you're not throwing water at any.
Not at all.
It's not punishing in any sense.
No.
Just want to be sure that mm-hmm.
Nothing like that.
Yeah. Sit in the front row and feel like we're
yes.
here.
You absolutely can.
And it's a friend of mine called it a Valentine to acting, and that's really a nice way to put it, because yes. there are points in this play in which the characters reflect on why they do it. Mm-hmm. Does this make any sense? And they tell themselves, yeah, it does. You know, you can create a new life. You can create a life which somehow climbs up under the from under the just the shabbiness of ordinary life. And remember, in 1623, well, just to, you know, Rebecca Hemings, she had 11 living children, but she lost three. So death is just part of this. And you say to yourself, oh, well, that's got to be grim. No, yeah. It really isn't. As someone says about Hamlet, they lean into death. And one of the reasons, the urgency for their task is that people who know are dying. And will the tradition die with them, or will they be able to pass it on? It's a terrific idea and terribly important, particularly for theater people who are used to forming these real close, intense alliances for 10, 12 weeks, and then dispersing and going on to other things. And then the set comes down and it's all over. That's almost the rhythm of life, at least for actors.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, give us a sneak peek. Why do we do it?
Well,
why do we do
what we do in
what
the
we
theater?
Do? You know, there's a passion and a love behind everything that everyone here is doing. As a theater, we're largely a volunteer organization, and so you know that we have to feel passionately about this, or we wouldn't be here. There is just something that is fulfilling. It feeds your soul to be on that stage and living these words, and losing yourself in a story or a character. It's an experience that you can't replicate in film. It's very different from film. And we do actually have some film, New Mexico film people in this cast. But it's a very different experience. And there is just something about that energy that you feel from the audience and from your castmates when you're up there that you only find it on stage. You only find it when you're out there lost in a character. And, I think everyone has a different motivation for this, but it's largely, it's the love of the art, really. I mean, it's the love of being able to be lost in someone else for a little while, I think.
Gunderson has one of the characters, Henry Condell, a comforter friend. John Hemings, who has just experienced a great loss. And John says, why do we do it? This is stupid. We're dressing up as kings, mm-hmm. and worse, we're dressing up as queens. And it goes on that way. And Henry says to him, well, don't you understand that we are achieving a kind of immortality? We get to feel again. And the grieving friend says, I feel too much. Mm-hmm. And Henry says, no, I mean, we begin to start all over again. We start feeling the way we want to and cannot in life. And that seems to me to be essential. This is a subject for another talk, but I think that all of theater, certainly all of the performing arts, is based on the idea of vicarious experience. Mm-hmm. We get to live several lives for the price of one. Yeah. And particularly when you're an actor and you've done, you know, how many roles, and you get to live all those roles for the price of one.
Exactly.
And it pays off. Mm-hmm. Or for some people it does. Other people just wears them out. Right?
If we keep going, it's because it's paying off.
Right.
Well, an important adjunct to that, I think, is that not only do we get to live all of these other lives, but because of the wonderful property of memory, mm-hmm. we get to live them again and again as we recall both the performances as a performer and the performances as an audience.
Good point. Very good point. They layer on, one on top mm-hmm. of another, and life gets richer and richer and richer as these accretions lay on. And they're transparent accretions. So you see through the current layer down to the previous layer. Mm-hmm. And that is really an important thing. Well, let me just give you one of the things that I love about this show is it's full of anachronisms. In other words, it's set in 1623, but we've got electric lights on stage. At one point, when we go to a print shop, it's a steam-powered print shop, you know, crazy kind of Dickensian print shop. But one of the things that we've tried to do in this production is to extend the idea of the timelessness of the work of William Shakespeare. So that at one point, just so that people don't worry about it, in one of the characters is quoting Shakespeare, but he's quoting him in French. And reason we put that in there was we wanted to remind people that not only would we have lost Shakespeare for the English language, we would have lost Shakespeare for the French language, for the Germans. Mm-hmm. All of, Northern European culture would have been influenced by the loss of that particular play.
True, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's been, I don't even know how many languages Shakespeare... innumerable.
As many as there
are.
As there are many countries in the UN,
I assume.
Well, Brian, you and I and our wives have sat and had coffee and pie and gone on forever, but you have a performance, final rehearsal this evening.
We do. Mm-hmm.
And Albuquerque Theater Guild, as wonderful as they are here, has limited me to the total time of this broadcast or podcast. So talk to me about where, when, and how to get tickets real fast.
Absolutely. You can get tickets through our website, which is adobetheater.org, and you can purchase your tickets on there. The shows, we open Friday, tomorrow, which is exciting. Our shows are Friday and Saturday evenings at 7:30, and we have Sunday matinees at 2 o'clock, and the show runs through July 29th. So we've got 4 weeks.
Okay.
And tickets are actually selling very quickly, so I would advise making your reservations soon because we are selling pretty quickly, which is wonderful. And our Sunday matinees, just so you know, usually sell out first.
Very fast.
Yeah,
right.
Very quickly, yeah.
Let me just mention that the tomorrow that we're referring to is actually this past Friday evening because this will show on the Monday after you open. But I want to thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you, Mike, for doing this. It's really,
really
wonderful.
Thank you.
That does it for now. Join us again in the weeks to come when we talk with other interesting people in Albuquerque's theater world. For more information on the Adobe Theater's season and to get tickets, go to www.adobetheater.org. And don't forget to drop by www.abqtheater.org to find out what the Albuquerque Theater Guild is up to, and to see what else is playing in town. If you're enjoying our programs, please share with your friends. Until we're together again, go see some live performance art, and we'll look for you right back here next time.